What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Urban Martial Artist Podcast. Happy New Year. And today we're going to talk about McDojos, what they are, and should they exist. I'm David.
I'm Yoshi.
I'm Rachel.
Stay tuned.
Sorry, I was gonna say we are sans Anna today, but I would love to chat with her at a later date and get her weigh in on this as well, because I'm very curious.
Also, this is Happy New Year, but it's like as of when this recording comes out, I mean, maybe way well past that time too. So,
That's a good point. Oh well.
well, so McDojos, do we like him? Do we hate him?
Well, let's
What's
start with
that?
what is a McDojo,
What's
right? So I know we have primarily martial arts listeners, but every once in a while we have like a friend or family member of the podcast crew that will listen in. So I guess we should start with the definition of that. So guys, what's your definition of a McDojo?
I would say a McDojo is a martial arts studio that prioritizes student satisfaction at the cost of money rather than the cost of technique and excellence.
Cost of money.
Yeah, so you pay for your rank as opposed to earning your rank.
I guess the way you stated it, it didn't sound like that. Like you say at the cost of,
So
at the expense of money versus rank. So it's like you're actually saying the opposite when you
oh,
said
okay. Well, I guess what I'm
so
trying
I
to
guess
say is
in
that
favor of money, in favor of
yeah, in
yes, you
favor
are
of like
promoted in favor of
right.
money rather than in
Yeah.
favor of your technique.
Right. So like basically, boiling that down, the studio values money over the excellence of its students. The
That's correct.
studio is there as it exists, or the dojo, McDojo, like McDonald's, pops up on like the every street corner market sort of thing, kind of like a fast food chain, and they just like bring people in and push them back out, trying to just be as profitable as possible, but not necessarily the best when it comes to we'll say martial arts integrity, I guess is kind of the phrase that I think of. Did you guys have McDojos around your areas? Do you have them like around your areas currently that you know of, or like did were there any that you like specifically remember seeing growing up?
I don't know. I grew up in a small town, so I really didn't have that phenomenon. Maybe later on, but I didn't really see it growing up.
I feel like there was, and for listeners that are older than me, you can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong in the comments. However, there was the United States kind of experienced this really huge martial arts boom in the 60s and 70s, especially as a result of a lot of new media regarding the martial arts in Hollywood. And so there was this huge movement, but a lot of that was what a lot of people would consider very old school style martial arts, right? Not necessarily a ton of students. It's very much like the best of the best. If you kind of think of somewhere in the like kind of Cobra Kai realm, very aggressive styles. And then as media started to really pick up on this piece of culture, more and more people went, oh wait, this could be profitable, and they kind of abandoned the small school model and went towards a McDojo style for the concept of making money on it, especially as more and more people were interested in it because they're seeing, you know, Bruce Lee movies, Steven Seagal movies, right? Like, you know, whoever it is, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, like pick one of the greats from back then, right? As you move through the decades and capitalism kind of takes over, you end up with a McDojo style studio versus kind of the old school studio that really kind of started in that first wave of martial arts in the United States. And I feel like that's kind of like where those schools, where those styles kind of like the styles of teaching and methodology really split, right? Are you valuing the martial arts or are you valuing the capitalism that you can profit on, the interest that the public has in the martial arts? What are your thoughts on that? That's kind of like my perspective on it.
I mean, yeah, I get that. Once the commercialization of martial arts in media then translate to commercialization in actual like martial arts schools, right? I guess the question is where does it start coming from that small homegrown studio into McDojo? Because obviously, if you want these martial arts owners, they want to make a living off of it. You need to make a profit off of it, right? So there's incentive to increase the number of students. But where does that transition take place? Is that at 25 students? Is that at 50 students?
I
100
don't think it's at
students?
a number of
I don't think so
students. I
either.
think it's at the mentality of the chief instructor
I
because
agree.
McDonald's, as it started, wasn't necessarily a crazy capitalist machine,
Right.
where you had the McDonald's brothers running their single restaurant versus when you have Ray Kroc taking over and creating the empire that he was doing.
I would
So.
agree with that, especially like I feel like there's this misunderstanding, especially to David's point about looking at number of students in a studio and assuming that it's a McDojo as a result of they have 250 or more students. Because the reality is at the end of the day, like especially master instructors that own and run these studios have been doing this like practice of martial arts for longer than people go through medical school in a lot of regard. From the time you're a white belt to the time you're a master, that's the equivalent of bachelor's, medical school, and residency. And doctors get paid a ton of money as a result of their experience and expertise and the amount of time that they spend honing their craft as doctors. Similarly, martial artists, especially when you hit that master level, have been spending equally as much time mastering their craft. And so, why shouldn't they be paid as a result of their expertise and knowledge, right? This concept of like the master on the humble master that exists, that I'm not gonna make any money off of what I know. And like I think that there's a fine line there of you don't want to like completely weigh overcharge and things like that, but when at the end of the day, like what you're looking at is like teaching martial arts as a career, right? I think that there is a number that's kind of associated with that, and I think that that's fair, right?
You know, I think as long as you're getting good quality, I mean, we've all seen the price of McDonald's go up. I don't
Right,
think
but
anyone
the
would ever
quality,
balk about paying good money at Fogo de Chao, for
right?
example.
I agree.
You know?
That's a really niche reference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, and I, so to that point, right, is like, I don't think that it needs to be looked at as like, oh, like they're turning a profit. That must mean they're a McDojo. That's not the case. It's, they might be turning a profit, but like, look at the quality of their students. And you can tell, right? You can tell people that are like actually at the end of the day, yeah, focused on quality. Now I think where it gets interesting is when you talk to, bigger studio owners, and they talk about where their lines are regarding kicking students out as a result of maybe they're not, the highest quality
I guess
because the students aren't focused, the students aren't, you know what I mean? And so it's
yeah.
like that is where things I feel like get dicey in like the profiting studio concept is like where do you draw that cutoff of like if you have a student that you're like beating your head against a wall because they're just not meeting your expectations, and you have your own internal thing of like I cannot in good conscience promote this student, but at the same time they're paying. So like that's where I think things get very in conflict with each other in the martial arts of like yes, they're paying, but you also know that they're not meeting the quality and standards for, say, testing for black belt. So
And
is that where it becomes a McDojo?
yeah, I think there's also that where the instructor needs to have some kind of relatability to each student as well. Needs to know what their path has been, right? So yeah, they've been paying, they're not up to par, but if I fail them, is that going to crush them or is that going to raise them, right? Is that going to give them a challenge? And you're as an instructor, especially as a head instructor, you should know your students well enough to know what's that impact is going to be on your student. So
And
you
then
know
if you,
which right path to take, right?
and then if you know what the what path would provide them quitting, you just tell them not to test. That's another way of quiet failing people before they have a chance to fail. Just say, you're not ready to test.
Yeah,
Wait a bit.
instead of like like a conveyor belt or
Yeah.
bell, like just get students through the whole the testing grind, and if they fall off, they fall off,
Yeah.
but they pass, they keep going, right? I think so.
Right.
Again, certainly it's a mentality more than a model, right? That sounds like that's defining what dojo versus
Right.
people or what your curriculum is, that kind of stuff. That's what it
Yeah,
sounded like.
that's a really good point, right? And I guess have you, especially because the two of you sit on black belt testing panels, what have the two of you seen either at either at testing panels or when you go, I know like Yoshi, like you went and judged an open tournament this past weekend, or was that yesterday?
That was yesterday.
Yeah, that was yesterday. Hey, look, this is timely, right? So you're seeing, especially at open tournaments, when you go to those, like all people from all kinds of different types of studios, do you think you're seeing more of kind of a value on a McDojo style? Just churn them out into the next rank and say, yep, sure, they're fine and they're being submitted for testing, or you see them on the panel and you're like, this person isn't ready. Are you seeing that? Or to the, to the example of open tournaments, are you seeing people competing at a rank that you go, this is a 15-year-old fifth degree black belt? Like, what on earth is happening? Right? That's really especially where we see the McDojo setting happening, is when you look at some kid that's 12, 13 years old, they've been training for like 4 or 5 years, and they're like a third or fourth degree black belt because the way their school is set up is, well, if you pay this much money, we can get you to this degree by this time frame, blah blah blah. And like, it's kind of one of those like car salesmen, like, sign up now and we'll throw in your third degree testing right now. Like, it's kind of one of those models that you like stereotypically see, but I don't know like how much that's actually out there, that it's kind of this ether thing that we all talk about and joke about, but how many McDojos that are really like that you're really seeing that in competition or
Yeah,
testing?
I can't say I saw that yesterday. I mean, I was in a very limited time frame of judging, and it's strictly the traditional tungsudo forms and sparring, right? So it's from what I saw, there were no McDojos that I could tell, at least from my brief experience with all of them there. I'm sure if I had been judging the entire day, I might have seen some of that for sure. And I've seen and heard stories of other people that they spent like $2,000 to for their kid to go test for their first degree black belt or something. It's something. I mean, that $2,000 might be a lot. It was an order of at least $1,000 to
Oh, I'm sure.
above that to pay. Just again, they're training for 3 or 4 years and they're testing for first degree black belt. They get paid $1,000. And that's a lot of that sounds very, very suspicious. Like very like it doesn't seem like they're too interested in the kids learning actual technique versus just getting money for them. So they're definitely out there, but I've not personally seen that.
David, have you seen or heard stories of similar McDojo situations?
Yes. So not as much, or really not at all on any of my testing panels or at least the open circuit tournaments I've been to, but growing up in high school, you would have all of the people that would, and this is for people younger than me too, people that would be under my instructor that would be getting their black belt at 13 or 14, and they would be hearing and, judging people who got their black belt when they were 7. So you could sort of see how these people are recognized even from early on like that. But technique-wise, luckily I haven't seen a lot.
Yeah, I can't say for me personally, I've really experienced a McDojo situation, but it's one of those things that, like, in our community, we hear about it all the time. And so it makes me wonder, like, how much of that is still out there, or how much of that was really, again, like, kind of in that media wave of martial arts, hitting the US and all of these studios opening up. Because I feel like, I see it all the time in, either on Instagram or just like in conversations with other martial artists. Like, there's always kind of this running joke amongst our community about McDojos, right? And like what that means. And we're all very clearly, I would say, against the concept of McDojos, right? They don't represent the martial arts in the way that we would like them to. They don't, teach good technique and write all these things that we're bringing up. But I know it's this joke, but I just don't see these studios existing or have actually like interacted or encountered somebody that's like, oh yeah, I was, again, like a fifth degree by the time I was 15. Like, I don't know of anybody that is actually like that. So,
Well, I
but
know
it's weird.
I have a student that
Oh yeah.
currently that he yeah I don't know if I would label his old school as McDojo, but I know they basically canceled all the adult classes, just had focused solely on kids because that's where the money's at, right? And so he had no place to train because he was basically lost his only place to play, his only class that he could participate in essentially until he came to my club. So there, indirectly, I have experienced the effects of the McDojo, I would say, or the outer effects of it in some
So do you
sense.
think then, as kind of a follow-up question to that, because I think you bring up a good point, right? The McDojo that we've been talking about that we all have in our heads is the thing that, we know we've heard previously existed. We've heard stories, or in your guys' cases, you've encountered it, right? But of the schools that are like, yeah, pay $2,000 and here's your black belt within a year, or whatever ridiculous amount it is. Do you think that McDojos still exist, but what it looks like has just shifted and it's now evolved into something else? Maybe it's not as overt as that anymore of the, $2,000, here's your black belt. What do you think it's evolved to?
I think it's a matter of what you view as acceptable technique for a rank.
Okay.
And perhaps that goalpost might be shifted at certain schools. Geez, I'm gonna ruffle feathers here. Maybe we can edit this out.
Oh,
But
say it, yeah. Say it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
say it.
So there's a theory about the law of averages. If Where you have, for example, 300 students, you're going to have more good ones simply based on the percentage. But then you're maybe devoting less energy on all of those 300 to make all of those 300 good. But you're still going to have more good ones than if you had 50 and had the same attitude.
Fair. So how, so my question to you is that also including, right? Is that underneath the idea that like you have one head instructor and that one instructor is running everything? Or does that also include the fact that that one instructor very likely has developed 10 other very good black belts underneath them, and those 10 other instructors are also helping, right? And they're so, like,
Yeah, so when
similarly,
you have
like, if
that
you develop
healthy,
them, they'll then develop all of them.
so when you have that healthy delegation, that's how you all want it to work. However, if you just have the mentality of bringing people through the door and by law of average, you'll have more good ones, you still have to answer for all of the not so good ones.
Yeah, that's a good
In my
point.
opinion, like what's going on with them? Why are they the way they are? Whereas if you see some smaller schools, you don't see that as much. And This is probably going to get edited out too, but I like to have a slightly, my school is not like two people. It's around
Hey, don't
35.
come at the schools that only have like two or
Well,
three
no. Like,
people.
my school is not super tiny.
Yeah.
My school is also not very giant. I also operate at cost. My students don't owe me anything. So for, and then this is going to get censored, but by virtue of that, I'm allowed to be a d to them in class within reason. Like sometimes if you're focused on the business, the student can become more of your customer than they are your student.
That's a good point, right? That's an interesting take on that, right?
And like, and when we have these business roundtables, I've been very open. Look, I don't want people to pay me so much because I want to be afforded the ability to be a d to them, like how my instructor was maybe a d to me. So maybe that's going to get edited out. That might have been too hot of a take, but.
No, I don't think so. I think that that's fair, right? I think that at the end of the day, right? That is where this conversation currently
Right.
lies, right? And it's not. I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase this.
I mean, you still have to foster community growth. That's a
Right.
thing. So when I was teaching very early on, I was trying to run my school just off of my own technical ethos. Like I'm an above average technician, therefore you should listen to me. But it wasn't until Aaron came around and just started making everyone friends with each other that we really had a student base take off. So that's important.
And Aaron being your younger brother.
Aaron being my younger brother, right? And then also fostering those relationships. And then it goes back to Yoshi. You need to understand what's going to break someone and what's going to build them up. But I like being blunt and brutally honest. I don't like trying to make a sales pitch to anyone.
Well, and two, right? I feel like that's where at the end of the day, as instructors too, and this is where we start to get into like philosophy of why people decide to really start teaching the martial arts, is really right when we talk about it all the time, is knowing your why. Why are you doing this? Are you doing
Right.
this, you know, because what you want to do is build, you know, 25 incredible adult black belts, right? Like, you know, that's where you want to go. Or is it that you really want to work with kids and develop, you know, or just people in general? It's not always kids, right? It's anybody that joins the martial arts. And it's like, you really want to develop all of these other things within them that the martial arts offers. They might not be able to do this incredible 540 roundhouse kick, you know, whatever craziness, but right, they're learning concepts of leadership, they're learning concepts of teamwork, communication, respect, responsibility, right? All of these things that like the martial arts leans so much heavier on as far as character development than a lot of other, say, after school extracurriculars. So if, you know, and I know that's a big part of this debate as far as, you know, size of school and what
Yeah.
kind of students you teach and all that kind of thing, right? And to your point, David, right? You really like working with adults. Not to say that you
Yes.
don't like working with kids, but like your comfort zone is very much like, again, the students that you can be a jerk to because they're adults and they can take it.
Right. And it's
And
like I've like meditated on this. I could work with people get this notion that I don't like working with children. And this is going to sound very dark, but if I'm going to be working with children, like I'm not going to resent it as long as it's a means of me increasing my capital. Like I will need to capitalize off of children. Well, that sounded very dark.
that did sound very dark.
Like
Maybe that gets
kids
edited.
need to fill my wallet. I don't enjoy it that much, but I don't hate it.
I guess.
So.
And I guess that's, but again, that's where it's like knowing your comfort zone and who you want to teach, and
Right.
who you want to teach ends up resulting in your why. Like the my little kids classes that I was teaching, like most of those kids were not going to, you know, probably continue. Like, you can tell when parents come in and like they're very much just like looking for their kid for like for something to do for the next 3 months, right? And then it's going to be soccer in the next 3 months, and then it's going to be basketball the next 3 months, right? It's like this cycle of how our society functions, and I understand that's a completely separate topic, because that's not how martial arts functions, right? But I know that in that short amount of time that I probably have them, unless I can convince them to stay, that they're probably going to forget everything I teach them at some point, right? Because they're not going to, if they don't continue with the martial arts, there's no way they're going to talk to their friends one day. We all have those friends that are like, I did karate when I was like 10 and I made it to orange belt. Like, the number of people that tell that to me on a regular basis is wild. But at the same time, like, they might not remember how to throw a sidekick, but they remember how they were treated with respect, right? They knew they had responsibility showing up for class, bringing your uniform has to be in certain condition, like, listening to instructions. Like, those are the things that they remember and will take with them even when they're not my student anymore. So, like, yes, did I profit off of them at one point? Yes. But I also know, and like, are they going to be a black belt? Probably not, unless they end up picking it back up again later on. But what I do know is that while they were in my studio, like on my floor, they were learning fundamental good citizenship things. And that to me is where it's like, that's a different type of success as a studio owner.
Yeah, I have a couple points off of that. One is, like David said, there's an important disclaimer that, like David, I don't operate off profit. I operate off cost. I'm not there to make a profit at all. And I have a much smaller club size compared to what David has, right? I know, Rachel, at one point you did have a commercial program-ish.
Yeah, it was.
But
How's this? For those of you that don't know, I'm in limbo as far as my karate studio goes because I had different career things happen. However, yes, I did have a starting up of a commercial type studio for a little bit
I think
there.
it'll be interesting to get Anna's take as well, because she is
Agreed,
really
because she's like full
full-time
studio,
still, right?
full, yeah.
Yeah, and so I understand we wanted like we our mentality, we want to focus on trying to like build up that student technique, their confidence, all that. But someone who's doing that as their full-time gig, right, that mentality is different. It's like, I need to make a living off of this. I need to be at a profit, and more than just a profit, I need to be able to like sustain my own living expenses plus the business expenses. So does that make them a McDojo by default? I don't think so.
No, I don't
But
think so
there's a
because,
balance. There's still a balance though, right? They still
yeah.
have to meet that profit margin, but still have that technique threshold met somehow.
Well,
How do you write
and
that?
I think to that point, Yoshi, is that why it's not a McDojo is because also to David's point earlier about the level of quality is level of quality helps people stay, right? I think that people would know coming in the door if it was like, yeah, pay this
Is
up
it?
front and we'll have you test. Like they would know that, like, they're like, wow, my kid looks like crap compared to this other person, and why is my kid at the same, you know what I mean? Like there starts to get that like weird questioning of quality, and people won't stick around.
I don't think so, honestly. I don't think it's
Really?
level of quality that could do that. It's the what back to what David mentioned about Aaron, it's that level of community. I think that's what
Oh, that's a
keeps
big part of it.
going there
Absolutely,
too,
that's a big part of it.
right? You could be in a wonderful community, but you can all suck at martial artists, and none of you know because you're all stuck at the same level.
That's a
And
good
you could
point.
be all, and if you never go outside of that, right? You never go to like an open circuit. You're not part of a larger association, right? If you're an independent studio, you're never going to know,
Yeah, that's a good
right?
point.
So.
Do you, to that point of going outside of that community, and you're right, having community definitely in any situation, right? Whether it's your karate studio, whatever your martial arts studio is, your swim team, your basketball team, or even your job, right? Like I've stuck around in jobs that like the job itself I did not like, but I loved my coworkers and I loved my manager. So the community that I was in made me stay for probably longer I would have than I would have otherwise, simply because the people I was working with at the time were so great, right? So community is definitely a big piece of it. But to the point,
For as long as we've known, I mean, if you look at the first autobiography that was ever written, there's a line in there that said, I did not sin because I enjoyed it or because I had anything to gain from it. I did it because of who I did it with.
I like that.
But I digress. Go for it.
No, oh yeah, no, it's a great quote, and it's a good point, right? But to the point of quality outside of community, when you meet other martial artists in the wild, we shall say, right? You're at a work event and it comes up when you have to do your give me a fun fact about you, and it's like, I'm a black belt, right? Like, you know. Inevitably, it comes up with some stranger, and then you start to talk and you find out they also train in some sort of martial arts. I'm speaking from my own personal experience, and I want to know what your guys' take on this is, if you've experienced the same thing. There's this like weird energy standoff when you meet somebody else in the wild that is also a black belt, where you kind of look at each other and you go, are you a real black belt or are you a McDojo black belt? And you kind of have this like, I don't want to call it a power struggle, but that's kind of what it feels like. And you're feeling each other out and you're like, are you real or are you a poser? And you ask immediately all of these questions to each other to try to figure it out.
Well, for me,
So here's
it's like I got you ask that question or you get that weird shift, right? And then you kind of take a stance, you wait for that tumbleweed to pass by. Like, it's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. Here's like my takeaway from that. If you're a poser, you will right from the get-go reveal which Don rank you are, and you'll just keep talking. But if you're the real person, you'll just answer simple yes or no questions.
That is
I like that.
100% my experience as well.
So like if I'm at work and someone asks me, "Are you a black belt?" I will say, "Yes, goodbye," and I'll move on.
You just say goodbye, just say goodbye. It's walk away.
I have so oftentimes found myself like, I don't ever actually use that I'm a black belt as my fun fact because I don't, not many people know it. It'll come up as people find out because it'll be like, you know, and if we might have talked about this in another podcast previously, but you know, when it's like, oh, what are you doing this weekend? It's like, oh, you know, I've got a karate tournament or whatever. Like it'll come up because that's what my plans are. And they go, oh, I didn't know. And then it's like this very brief conversation. It's like, yeah, you know, I train and you know, I have a tournament or I have a training event or whatever it is. And then every now and then someone will ask, well, what rank are you? Are you a black belt? And then I'll say yes.
Yes, and then you move on.
Exactly. And then you're like, you're done from there.
Yeah, I try to go out my way to like if I'm going to out of town for like a martial arts event, I guess I'm just going to Minneapolis. I won't I'll try not to elaborate any further than that. Yeah, I'm going out of town. I'm visiting friends, so I'm like, which is technically true. But I try to avoid the fact of actually saying that I'm going to a martial arts thing versus I'm going to an event.
Why do you think we do that?
I don't know. It's a, I don't know.
There's provocative people out
For me,
there.
it's a, yeah, there's that. But for me, it's a very self-conscious thing, I guess, for me. It's like, I don't want to like draw attention to the fact that I'm doing something like that. I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I'm weird, I guess. I don't know.
and then there's the inevitability of like the questions that we always have to answer. And I know we've talked about this before, but
It's a
it's like,
pain.
yeah. And like everybody is immediately. Either they're like, oh, that's really cool, and they just move on, or they start to poke holes at it and they start to like try to make you prove it. And I'm like, I don't need to prove myself to you. I've proved myself in front of all of these other people plenty of times. I don't, you're not one of them that I care to prove anything to. And so they start to kind of pick at it. And so anyway, I feel like that's also maybe why when you meet somebody else that, you know, trains into different art, whatever, and you find out just in mutual conversation, there's kind of that weird standoff of trying to figure out, are you a poser or are you real?
I know like recently for at work we had to like put together like a slide of we're going to this new way of working whatever and so and I'm taking on a role and we're supposed to put out like well what our work experience is what our relevant work experience is about at the very end it's like what's one fun small fun fact about you so I just put in like I have 28 plus years of martial arts experience like that's it not saying I'm a black belt I'm not saying I'm a fourth degree black belt none of that stuff just like no I've I've been training for
Or
20 years.
how many black belts you have.
Right. Yeah, there's another one. Yep. Oh, there was another point I was going to make earlier on what you said earlier, Rachel, was about making an impact on like on a kid's life. And reminds me of an interview that Fred Rogers of Mr. Rogers fame made with Charlie Rose about,
Love
and
Mr. Rogers.
love him. Oh, love him. One of my idols. But he Charlie Rose asked him a question like, so how many children do you think you've impacted over your however many years of television? And Mr. Rogers' response was, I don't care how many, as long as it's one. As long as I reached one kid, that's all I care about. And he clearly reached way more than one kid in his throughout his career, right? Including me. So like that, I think that perspective helped me a lot in my teaching experience. Not just in my current club, but throughout my other years, helping other people right there at Dojangs. Like it doesn't matter like how many kids I taught, as long as I made an impact on one of them, I'll be happy. I hope I did. I don't know if I did, but I hope I did.
Yes, Yoshi, of course you did.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So, as far as McDojo conversations go, I feel like we've kind of made our stances pretty clear as to how we feel about them.
I think
Yes, Yoshi.
I guess we have our feelings, but I guess the question is, do they have a place?
Yeah, that I
Do
was,
they have a
that's exactly
place?
what I was going to bring up was
Right?
like where do are should they exist?
No.
So that's an interesting thought. I mean, no, as in they should not exist in general, like legally.
Well, here's the deal. Like,
I
certain
mean,
vibes might be perfect for certain people, but you shouldn't just have a pay to rank up system. You should be doing certain things. Like the quality level is here or there. Some places might be a better fit for other people than others. But at the end of the day, if it's just a for-profit, pay to rank up place where there's like zero quality, I don't see a reason for them to be helpful.
I mean, to that point too, right? This is gonna sound maybe kind of extreme. Whoops, apologies if it does, but especially when referencing like specifically the pay to rank up concept of a McDojo, every other concept of like things that might feed into like what some people might view as a McDojo now, all of that kind of nebulousness aside, right? Because I feel like there is some of that when especially people that think like any sort of a studio that makes a profit, like that, you know, that is a McDojo, that's right, that's not the case, right? If we're talking specifically pay to rank up systems, part of me kind of feels like that's in some ways almost fraudulent, like false advertising, if that makes sense, where it's like, you know, because that's not what that rank means. Because to David's point, it's not quality of technique and understanding of martial arts. And so like for other martial artists out there, it feels kind of like a fraudulent ripoff. And so like I mean, I know Yoshi was joking when he was saying, you know, legally, and it's like it kind of made me think of that. That I'm like, from a le like, I'm not saying it's illegal, but there is a part of me that goes, people get sued for fraud all the time, and so McDojo pay to rank kind of feels like a fraud. So I'm not
But
saying
I
it should be
mean,
illegal, but it feels like it is.
yeah, I guess, but for those, you know, families or people, you know, who paid for it, I mean, they got their black belt, they got what they paid for. I mean, I'm not saying that's a favorable thing, but they got their 2 years of that karate experience, or whatever martial art experience, right? And they got their black belt, and then they leave. And they got their, it's, they
I guess at
got.
that point though, like what's, again, it goes back to the what's your why? Like what's the point to that person or that family at that point, unless it's I could very well be wrong on this because I of course have like my perspective on this, and that could be a narrow one, but I don't really picture a whole lot of people really desperately wanting to be like only calling themselves a black belt to the point that they're going to pay a bunch of money to just do pay to rank. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess I've seen
I
it.
don't feel like that's enough of a brag for people to want to pay that much money, because what's it's not going to get you anything else.
I've seen people do it. That's the thing. I've seen people pay that and it's get have the rank and have had the privilege or right way to say it, but have the right to say, hey, I'm a black belt in this system.
That's
Right.
wild to me.
I've seen it happen, so
Yeah.
it's not
I'm
entirely
not
unreal.
saying it doesn't.
That's why
It
that's me.
just.
That's me. A little bit of me playing devil's advocate. Like this,
Yeah.
we don't just people kind of want that instant gratification. I'm putting air quotes up there, and that, even though it is a
True.
couple year commitment, but it's relatively it's very quick, right?
Yeah.
It's you're barely dipping your toes into the waters of martial arts, and you get a black belt. Yay! I did my thing. Now I'm gonna move on to my next shiny thing.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, we live in a microwave society. Somebody told me that one time and it's really stuck, right? We want to be able to hit the 30-second timer and have everything ready right now, right? Information at our fingertips with our phones, right? Everything is very instant gratification. So I guess if that's what people really need and that's what they seek, you're right. That's exactly the route that they would end up going. I just, and again, as a black belt, I sit there and I think like, what the heck is the point? Why? I don't get it, because it's again like you're missing the purpose of black belt. And for those of you that haven't listened to it, listen to our episodes on what is a black belt
Yeah.
to
Nice.
circle back to that,
I like
right? But
that.
you're missing the point, and it's like just for a bragging right just feels really silly, because that's the only thing it gets you. It just gets you this like, yep, I'm a black belt, and that's the only thing you can say out of it. You can't do anything super cool. You don't understand what it means, what that value is. You know what I mean? Like you're missing out on community, you're missing out on the values. Like there's so many things besides just saying I'm a black belt, and that just doesn't make sense to me why somebody would want to do that. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. C very clearly it does. It just like it doesn't register as to why you would want to do that.
This reminds me of a lot of my students that are not the best students and then they quit to become male models. It's very
What?
interesting.
Please explain.
Well,
Might
they're
have
not
to edit
really
this out
there.
too.
They don't really enjoy sparring. They don't enjoy anything in Tung Sudo that involves touching someone else. So they're just there for forms and to put on their resume that they do karate and that they're a martial arts expert. So I've had two students that left because obviously you've got to make con some sort of contact at some point, and they just couldn't handle it. And they're both into modeling now. It's very interesting.
What was I gonna say? So I guess so. We know the Muk Dojo exists. We know what can we do to like, is it a lack of education among the populace that these things exist? How do we encourage people to seek out actual like I say actual, I get air quotes, but like. Dojos or dojangs that actually like focus on, the importance of black belt or
Are
just,
you saying, like, for our listeners that might be looking into doing the martial arts, like what
right.
signs to watch out for?
Besides what, either what side to watch out for, how do we, how, I don't think we can ever eliminate McDojos. They're going to be a fact of
Yeah.
life. They're going to be
I
out there.
think.
How do we educate the populace? Like, I don't know if that's the best way to say it.
So I think there's kind of two answers to that. Is like one, again, like if you're going to the martial arts, if you're, one of our listeners and you're looking either to get back into the martial arts or start for the first time, right? Know your why, right? Why are you doing it? And if the answer is because you're looking for instant gratification, then this probably isn't for you, right? That's like, I feel like the number one piece of advice is why on earth do you want to do this? And then the other piece of that too is as far as like education of like if you're looking into new studios, like example, I live in a new area now. Spoiler alert, I moved. So as I'm looking around at various other martial arts studios in my area, like that's something that's in my mind of like, is this place reputable? Am I gonna jive well with the instructors and things like that, right? Because there's like all of these schools everywhere that I'm like, oh wow, they teach really cool things, and you know, I want to learn all of the things, right? But you know, I guess, do you guys have tips on like, you know, even just talking to me, right? Like, what do you look out for when you're trying to avoid a McDojo? What are the red flags you immediately see?
Couple of things. One is if they have pricing front and center, that's a red flag for me anyway. It's like they're trying to market something at you, right? So that's one, number one. Number two is I try to look for like some kind of accreditation. Like what are they part of a large organization? And what's the do they have like a profile on the instructor? What kind of information, what kind of background does the instructor have? So that's why, like, if there's nothing about that, then that's another red flag for me.
This one takes a bit to find, but I was telling my students this yesterday. It is a red flag if the instructor does not spar with the students.
Interesting. Why, because why, you want to explain that?
I was gonna say, can you explain a little bit more?
Sparring is putting yourself out there. Sparring is, maintaining your technique to an extent, and it's an indication of fitness. I was at an event one time, and some higher ranking instructor asked someone who I was having a conversation with, "Can you please come to my school to teach a sparring class? I seem to have forgotten how to spar."
Oh, major red flag there. Oh.
I always make an effort to spar my students.
To David's point, right? Like, I mean, especially when, you know, I mean, for me, especially having like so few students, of course, I'm out on the floor with them all the time because they need somebody else on the out on the floor with them. But I do agree that like seeing the head instructor go out on the floor with their students, and somebody had said to me one time that your chief instructor should have their focus on like your brand new people, right? Because especially having those like initial interactions with the chief instructor of, you know, this is who we are, these are our qualities and our values and what we're looking for, and really like building that foundation for their students. And then they should also be working with obviously your advanced students, and those like is especially if you have a bigger school and you have other instructors that are helping out, if, and you have a chief instructor kind of model, that's where their energies should be focused on, is at the very beginning and making those impressions and really like hammering in those basics. And then again with your advanced students, especially as they're getting ready to test for black belt, and really like, you know, using that knowledge of like kind of fine-tuning everything. And so yeah, to David's point, if like your chief instructor is just like not out on the floor like hardly at all, and they're like, yeah, so and so is like running it all the time, it's like, well, then why are you the chief instructor? And maybe that's a hot take, but
Symbiotic take. It's like a, what do you call that? The Korean Tang take. It gets spicy level.
yeah, spicy garlic,
There it
probably
is.
isn't
Spicy
garlic.
garlic. So it's
Yeah,
got flavor, but it's
it's
not
got some
burning.
flavor to it, but it's not burning.
Cool.
I like it. We're gonna start ranking our takes like
Yeah,
Buffalo Wild Wing
Buffalo Wild
sauces.
Wings. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
B Dubs, if you want to sponsor us, I like wings.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, cool.
There was
So
some there's some people that don't want to rank up to the point of being fourth dan, or a master instructor because they see how they lose motivation sometimes.
I guess if you are listening to this and you either have a, either maybe you're an instructor, or you have a club, or you have a larger studio, or maybe you have a McDojo yourself. I don't know. Comment and let us know if you're right or wrong, or what your thoughts are. I guess until next time, keep training.
Yep.
Hey everybody, if you liked our episode, please don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us. We are on Instagram at Urban Martial Artist. We are on Facebook, also the Urban Martial Artist. Our website is urbanmartialartists.com. And feel free to reach out at our Gmail, urbanma312@gmail.com. Thanks.